Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification, and they're satisfying to scratch no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
For the ones standing guard. For the eagle-eyed. For the knights in shining armor. And for all those who support them. We are Grainger, your experienced safety partner. Offering supplies and solutions for every industry. Committed to helping keep your facilities safe. And your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com/safety, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, it's film study once again for Sunday, August 11th, as we're going to look back at preseason week one. And this time we're going to take a look at the offense. Lots of talk about Lamar Jackson, Miles Boykin, and some other guys. Ken McKusick, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. How about you?
I'm doing well. I like this rotating of co-hosts that we're adding to the show each week. That's been a lot of fun. And we've got Ivan Evans with us tonight, who you may be familiar with his YouTube videos. You may not. Either way, we're really excited to have Ivan join us tonight. Ivan, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'm glad to be here.
Ivan joined us for the Ben Powers panel discussion a couple months ago. That really went well. And Ivan had great insights. We were very lucky to have four people with very different ways to look at offensive line play, and really appreciate Coach Evans' viewpoint.
I'm glad to be here. I love talking O-line play. Just love talking football, period.
All right, we're going to have lots to talk about on the O-line in particular this this episode.
Remember, before we roll into the details and all, let's just remind everyone of the new website. To be visiting and sharing, promoting, letting everyone know that you now want to go to filmstudyravens.com instead of the old site for all of Ken's writings and all these podcasts. So share that, spread the word, and help us grow filmstudyravens.com.
All right, thanks, Josh.
Yeah. All right. You want to, I guess the story of all going into this game, the whole story was Lamar Jackson. At least the overwhelming big pop culture story going into it. I know I know you two, and you guys love the O-line play, and I know you guys are excited about Ben Powers. But the average fan, it's all about Lamar Jackson and what he's going to play like this season, and will he grow?
Right. Well, it's true. I think even O-line fans like Ivan and I would probably agree that the Ravens are going to rise or fall with Lamar Jackson this year. And if he has a big year, they'll be fine. And, you know, I just love everything I have seen so far in terms of maturation, in terms of his field awareness, in terms of what we saw in the first game of a willingness not to run the ball. We're going to talk a little bit about that. You know, just definitely there's been progression in multiple areas, and I think he spent his offseason very well.
You can see his progression just on one simple play, the pass to Chris Moore. You see him look at, I don't recall which tight end was in the game, and then check off to Chris Moore and actually throw a good ball where Chris Moore could catch and run. So his progression, you know, from last year is shown just in that little bit right there.
We're talking about that very first boot of the game on the first or second play. I think they might have had a 2-yard loss on a run. Then they had the boot right, and it was, he didn't take the first level. He went to the second level.
Right. Yeah. Chris Moore got maybe 20 or so yards on it.
Mm-hmm.
He now pulled out, looking at the tight end, and went on the next read.
Clearly, he was told not to run for preseason week one.
Yeah, it looked like that. And he asked not to run. And I think obviously that creates some additional stress situations for him to have to figure out something across the pocket. I thought one of the really impressive throws of the game was another throw to Chris Moore that went for pass interference. He went all the way across the field. And he must have seen something. And the defender obviously had to commit pass interference to keep him from catching the ball. So that's good. But, you know, normally you don't want a quarterback to make that throw, but I think he actually was throwing it to an open spot.
Right. That was a difficult throw, and he threw it fairly accurate. Fairly accurate.
All right. Well, I mean, another topic that's going on, and we can talk about the Ravens, and we're going to get back to the individual efforts for the players here. But Hard Knocks, we can't have a show without basically talking about that and the Raiders. The producers have just got to be absolutely falling over themselves laughing with all of the Antonio Brown antics.
He is really a diva. You know, they're one episode in, and he flew in on the balloon. And now he has these prehistoric feet that he's working with on top of Hellman Gate.
Yeah.
So everybody has an opinion about AB, and I think he's a weird dude. And if you didn't know he was weird by his haircuts, you're really starting to see his weirdness now. I kind of felt sorry for him a little bit when the stuff came out about how Ben used to kind of do the guys. But with him pulling these things, all that sympathy for him just kind of goes away. Because he's bringing unwanted attention to the team, but very much wanted attention via HBO.
Yeah, there you go. And I certainly hope Hollywood doesn't have any of this in him. But, you know, hopefully it's not a distant family thing there that he's inherited in some way. Anyway, the best meme I saw about it was one. Actually, I don't know if this is technically a meme, but this comment on Twitter I saw about it was that he threatened to retire because the chef at the Raiders facility had refused to cut his peanut butter and jelly sandwiches diagonally instead of straight across. Anyway, lots of funny stuff. Anyway, Ivan, before we get into everything, why don't we mention right now up front, where do they find your YouTube channel so they can watch all your offensive line analysis?
YouTube is Sip the Tally. And just go on YouTube, type that in, Sip the number 2 Tally. Mississippi to Tally, that's kind of my little mantra. And on Twitter, it's Coach Avis 9. And I post a lot of stuff on there. And that would take you to my YouTube page also.
All right. Great stuff. And I've watched the videos before. Well worth it. You know, he goes back and forth on a lot of these. There's a lot of instructional component in there, and it's just great whether you're a coach or just a fan of offensive line play. So I highly recommend them. I want to talk about one particular hit before we get into the OL for this game, though, that I think really had an impact on the game. And we saw, obviously, Kenny Young take the huge shot to Minshew's chest. I almost thought it was going to be a penalty just because of the bounce of that helmet. But you can really see he went at him heads up, hit him square in the middle of the chest, dropped him back on one of the biggest hits we've seen by a Raven player since Bart Scott took down Ben in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very impressive hit. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What I was going to say was, as vicious as that hit was, Minshew was kind of sort of off guard because he fumbled with the ball. So by the time he picked it up, you know, it was nothing he could do. So had he saw it coming, he maybe wouldn't have looked as vicious, but it was definitely a crowd pleaser. I think I jumped off the chair when I saw it because I didn't see it live. And it was one of those things that I kind of wish had happened about 5 or 6 years ago when he was torching us when he was a sophomore in high school.
Did not realize he was down from that wave. That's interesting. Yes. Anyway, one thing really struck me about that. The Ravens at that point, I didn't really notice this until later when I was charting the game for the offense and for the individual play-by-play stuff, but for the offensive line, actually. But they had had one unblocked blitz before that play on 10 passes. Okay, now what I'm talking about is the Jaguars had run one unblocked blitz. Now let's talk about that a little, because to scheme for pressure in that way in a preseason game is a little unusual. So 1 out of 10, that's not too unusual. Why is it unusual? Because coaches don't like to show everything they've got in the playbook in the preseason. They really want to keep you guessing. They don't want to have you advance scouting their blitzes before the season starts. And, you know, they want to run them in their own walkthroughs and practices and obviously get used to them there. What we saw on the next 23 plays after the hit were 6 more attempts to rush the quarterback with a schemed blitz. And all of them were attempts and successful attempts, unfortunately, to slip through to the quarterback, either off the slot, from a linebacker, from safety. And they were very effective at doing it. And part of me says that was retribution for that Minshew hit.
Normally, I think it's an unwritten rule that you don't show all your exotics during preseason for the aforementioned reasons that you stated. But something had to happen to where it'd be like, okay, since you're doing that, this the game we're playing. So, and that's what I think was retaliation for it. Almost like in baseball, when you know, you hit your guy and then the other team hits the guy and then we just have a back and forth. So yeah. I think that's, you know, I agree with you. That's kind of what happened. And as an unwritten rule, you don't really throw the kitchen sink at guys in preseason. For one, you want to, you know, have the gentleman rule of not getting people hurt, but you also don't want to expose yourself to people getting a book on you early in the year. Now, unless you got an ample amount of exotics, you can show that, man, that's different, but then that's a lot of learning to do too.
Yeah. All right. I mean, it was just one of those plays. Anyway, let's get to some of the stuff that I know we're just dying to talk about. That's this Ravens offensive line performance in this game, which I think overall was not terrible, but it certainly had its ups and downs across the line in terms of what was going on. One of the things I like to do with preseason games is look at the order of entry of the players, because I think that gives you a really good true reading on the depth chart. Mm-hmm. So we had they started at left tackle with Stanley, left left guard going across, Illuminor, Skura, Hurst, and Brown. Now, Yanda didn't play, so Hurst was in his place. Illuminor got the start at left guard, which is, of course, the most hotly contested position. I don't think anybody's questioning about who's going to be starting the season at left tackle, center, right guard, or right tackle right now. There are some people who think maybe Skura should not be it, but I don't agree with that. I think that's fairly silly at this point. But anyway, the left guard is the position where there's some question about who will start. Illuminor got the chance in this first game, and he'd been running with the ones during practice a fair amount. Now, as I scored his game, it wasn't particularly good. I've got to tell you, I went through play by play. There's some functional things I didn't like, but he only scored a 0.66 on my scale, which is a high F at left guard. So kind of a bummer of a game here, and he's missing a fairly big opportunity.
Right. He has a grand opportunity, especially with Lewis being traded and Young not playing. So now he's going to get a multitude. He's going to get Hurst's reps, and he's going to get the reps that Lewis would have got on top of being in front of Powers. So it looks like it's his position to almost lose, him and Hurst. But I don't think with the way he showed Thursday, that it's going to happen. He has to improve. I don't know if it's not knowing what the players are running or the guy was just physically beating him. I'm sure he knows the scheme because he's been there a while. So he just got to make the most of the opportunity and definitely do it before Powell starts to gain knowledge of the system. Because I think Powell's waiting in the weeds, just learning. Hopefully learning from Yonder And, you know, once he gets in that spot, it's maybe hard to see them.
We'll get back to Powers in a second, but I did want to take you through the scoring on Illuminor here.
Okay.
He had 35 scored snaps as I had it, missed six blocks, which is a lot for 35 snaps, particularly at guard. The you miss more blocks on the outside because it's harder to contribute on the backside of run plays as a tackle. But as a guard, you really have an opportunity just about every play to make a block in the way that I score them. Made two blocks in level two and delivered one pancake. Those are good things. Connected on two or three pulls, that's okay at guard. Maybe about 70% would be normal. He had a nice, well-maintained block of good in level two, which was his solo highlight in this game. However, he also gave up parts of two pressures, and he gave up a big quarterback hit on a stunt that I gave him two-thirds of the charge for. So when you get all through that, and it's 35 snaps only with the misses, it's 0.66, and that's a high F at guard. 67 is actually what he would have needed to get a D-.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not the end of the line for Illuminor. Certainly, people have mulligan games during a year, but the functional thing I don't see him doing well, and not nearly as well as Powers, is he's a very big man,
right,
and he is not taking the time to lean on his opponent the way that Powers did.
Right. He has to use that size to basically to his advantage, because once he can lock in with guys, he should have no problem putting them or leveraging them where he wants them. But he's not doing a good job with his hips, not doing a good job with his feet to getting in position to maintain blocks.
So do you think he's – well, let me ask you this. He played tackle pretty much exclusively last year. I'm not saying he didn't play some guard in practice, but his in-season reps were at tackle, 19 snaps at the end of the Carolina game. Then he played the whole Pittsburgh game. He actually played pretty well at tackle.
Mm-hmm.
But now moving back to guard again, obviously he's had time to practice, so it shouldn't be like he's in a poor spot. But he almost looks like a tackle playing guard to me now because he likes to keep people at arm's length rather than get to the body.
I can agree with that. His the way he's blocking on runs is almost like he's just leveraging guys out of holes instead of moving them out of the holes. And that tackle, you can kind of do that with as wide as the ends are. But I can agree exactly what you're saying. He looks like a tackle trying to learn how to play guard again. So maybe that will be the reason he gets a mulligan and we, you know, well, they, the coaches, give him a chance to try it again. But it needs to happen quick.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's so many players for them to try out that there's going to be pressure for them to move on. Now, I did already talk to people who were at camp the last couple of days, and he's still running with the ones as of Saturday. So okay. That's an indication he'll probably end up starting against Green Bay on Thursday. So we'll see if that changes. Now, we did want to go on and talk a little bit about Powers, who I was very impressed with. I thought he had a terrific game. We'll start with my scoring if that's okay.
That's fine.
29 plays, 27 blocks, only two missed. One was on that Urban stretch left, and another where he moved to L2 and didn't make an effective block. But anyway, 0.93 per play, didn't have any pass blocking mistakes, and none that resulted in a problem anyway. It's an A without adjustment, and given the level of players he was playing in that second half, there wouldn't be a reason to adjust because the adjustments are made for the amount above the replacement level of the competition primarily. And he didn't really – he was playing replacement level competition or even maybe a little cut lower.
Right. I agree. When I realized he was in the game and then I kind of honed in on him, I didn't see him make a mistake. I didn't see him overpower anybody either. I just saw him do his job. And, you know, whatever the run, if the run was off him, he, you know, he sealed the guy and opened the gaps. And if it was a pass play, he kind of held his own. I think I saw one play where he was getting bull rushed a little bit and he dropped his anchor and that bull rush stopped almost immediately. And, you know, I was impressed because there was nothing to see that stood out. So anytime you have a lineman that pretty much is invisible,
yeah,
I think that's good for him or good for the line as a whole, but definitely in this case, because I was playing for jobs, that was good for him to yeah, be invisible and not have a standout moment.
Yeah, no news is good news. There's one other thing that I noticed about Powers, and this was very evident also from the game that I looked at from his college play against Texas, is that he really took his time in this game. I'd love you to go back and take a look at this particularly, Ivan, is how he leaned on his opponents and he maintained those blocks to the whistle. Because he's a guy that gets people angry, whereas Illuminor is very distinct stylistically. He tries to push people away and pinball that opposing defensive tackle or defensive end rather than try and stick him on the body. But Powers very much leans on him. And I know we had some disagreement among the four of us, and I think I'm not sure where you were on this, but we had some disagreement among the four of us if he was going to be able to maintain good technique at the pro level, which would keep his anchor as good as it had been in college, or whether he was beating lesser opponents.
Right.
Now, I saw some of the good things we saw in college, and I didn't really see any of the bad things that were pointed out by either Cole or by Michael Crawford on our panel discussion.
Now, I watched a game. Well, I watched a bunch of games with Powers because obviously I did the breakdown on him. But I talked to somebody recently, going back to one of those clips where, because you know that he played with Cody Ford, mm-hmm. and I think they had two other draft picks on that line also. But the play I stopped it on, Cody Ford was in the end zone laying on somebody. Powers had a guy like 2 yards deep, like basically suplexing him. And the other two guys were basically, all of them were blocking past the wheel. So it's like everybody else was stopped. Those four guys plus the center was still playing. Mm-hmm. So he has that, or whoever the O-line coach is at Oklahoma is, has really put that in their mentality to play through the whistle, to not stop until you're almost pulled off a guy. And that, mm-hmm. that'll help, or down the line for him, because he has that nastiness in him.
Yeah. We always hear that there's nothing more tiring than rushing the passer. So it's the defensive player who typically gets more tired, and anything that offensive lineman can do to wear that guy out by leaning on him. You see that with boxers sometimes. Mm-hmm. And Ali in his heyday would have a boxer, if I remember in the Foreman fight, in fact, that he would mm-hmm. have a boxer under his arm for a while just to tire him out. And so,
yeah. Floyd pulls those kind of stunts also.
Okay. Floyd Mayweather, we're talking about
that.
Yes. Okay. All right. Anything else to say about Powers before we move on?
I just think by that stretch run of the season, he's going to be that guy.
All right. They didn't give it to Brown right away. Would you be moving up and moving on, given all the players they have to try out, given the fact that they may want to go back to Hurst, given the fact that maybe even Bozeman needs to get a shot if Powers can't do it against some of the top players? Would you give him the shot this week, or would you wait another week and let Illuminor figure it out?
I would give Illuminor, Bozeman, and Hurst the shot before Powers. Because in my opinion, with Powers being a rookie, if he's equal to or right up under those three guys, I go ahead and play him, because he's the youngest and he still has a ceiling. They may be close to their ceiling, but if he's equal to or right up under their level after giving those guys a shot, I go ahead and put him in there. That's why I say for that stretch run, I think he's going to be the guy.
All right, so that speaks to something similar than for what was done with Orlando Brown last year in terms mm-hmm. of waiting to do it. All right, can't argue with that too much. All right, well, let's see. What else we got that we want to talk about on the offensive line? I guess we had Bozeman and Macari switching that off. And one of the things that's interesting about Macari is that he's taking all of the shotgun 7-on-7 snaps in camp. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that may be they just want Bozeman and Skura both to participate in maybe O-line drills that are occurring at the same time those 7-on-7s are occurring. But Macari has a very consistent shotgun snap, and I'm thinking he'd be a useful guy to have around on the practice squad, and maybe a guy that, if you trust the shotgun snaps coming regularly from somebody like that, maybe you do put him in if you have an injury down the line.
Now, if he's just only taking those 7-on-7 snaps, I don't think that's a good look for him. I think they're just using him for the quarterback to get a look, mm-hmm. to go through progressions and kind of time things up. So if he's not down there in the run blocking part of the practice, I don't think that bodes well for Macari.
Okay, that's a good point. So they certainly gave him a long trial in this game, mm-hmm. and I didn't think he played poorly. Although I got to admit, I did not score him individually. So the only thing I have to go back on is that I didn't have a pressure recorded on my notes from mm-hmm. what he did. I didn't have one for Bozeman either, for that matter. But anyway, I would agree with you that if they're only using him in that, it's like having a camp arm
right.
at center. Yeah.
Exactly. I agree 100%. Now, a lot of those guys I didn't see to give up much as a whole. I think they played mm-hmm. fairly well as a whole.
Yeah, they really did. And the pressures come in three different ways. And the Ravens did not have good ample time space in this game. Let me start with that. They only got 11 out of 33 ample time and space. McSorley was the most affected. But as we mentioned earlier, a lot of that was these unblocked scheme blitzes where they had seven of those. So once you get back to that, now we're back at a reasonable level of ample time and space had they not been going crazy on the Ravens offensive line trying to hurt our quarterback, darn it.
And get that hit back.
There you go. There you go. So one other guy I want to talk about who got a very extensive trial is Gregory Sinat. Mm-hmm. So second-year player out of Wagner, of course, and he's really what I consider to be one of the first picks of the DaCosta era because it's Ozzie's last year, but those last two picks were Sinat and Sealer, mm-hmm. and they were both small school picks. And we know DaCosta's really the architect of that small school scouting group they have and really asks them to do more at small schools. And finding Sinat obviously was a pretty nice hit for them if it works out as well as it did in this game. Now, people are going to remember him for having the hold-in call that called back Boykin's touchdown.
Mm-hmm. I think he's in the catbird seat for the backup tackle at, you know, at both spots. Because when you look at the guys behind him, that well, basically, according to your chart, Prince and Applefield, those guys didn't show me much. I saw Prince maybe miss a couple run blocks and also get some pressure. And give up some pressure. And not necessarily give up close to a sack, but guy just basically went around him and we threw the ball, so it wouldn't probably be counted as a pressure under your stats. But those other guys behind Sinat, unless they bring somebody in, I think he's going to be the backup to both tackles almost by default.
Yeah,
unless he screws it up.
Yeah, completely agree. And the two other guys they have on the team, Illuminar played tackle last year and played tackle pretty well, mm-hmm. but he's been playing guard again this year. He could be the backup tackle again. Yeah. He could be the second, or he could be the first or the second. And then Hurst, of course, has a lot of experience at tackle, and most of it is bad, honestly. Last year, he was okay at right tackle early on. And I think if they're going to try him on either side, I don't think I'd want to take the risk with a rookie left guard being the helper for him. I'd rather have him at right tackle where Yanda can bail him out the way he did early last year, mm-hmm. before Brown came on. But Sinat, I just want to go back him for a second. His overall grade was a C in this game, but if you take out that holding penalty, which is saying, like, if I take out this arrow through the heart, you know, he has basically an A-minus game otherwise. So it was a game that I was excited about. He's more athletic than the typical left tackle, even though he's built pretty much like Ronnie Stanley. He's almost as athletic as him. And, you know, Stanley's a first round pick.
Right.
So we wouldn't accept that. So, I was happy to see him get out in space. He made a really nice seal block on that 9-yard cutback by Hill. Remember how quickly he made that cutback? And that was Sinat's nice block setting that up. So, that was one of his good blocks of the day anyway.
Yeah, like I said, it's his job to – well, not his job to lose, but his position to lose because he can be that backup. And if they don't want to have the same person backing up, you know, both tackles, he could be one of those backups. So if they decide to move Hurst or Luminor back to tackle, you know, and be a backup guy, that could be him. Mm-hmm. But he's on that borderline. He got to stay consistent.
Right. I agree. Should get a fair number of snaps, I would think, the rest of this preseason, with where he is positioned on the roster. We may see a little bit of a Luminor at tackle. I don't know what your feeling about that is, but it seems to make sense to me that they wouldn't just play him at guard if they might have to move him back into a swing role.
If they don't, and you know, this may be one of the reasons they're playing him here early, because if he can't pick it up, they can go ahead and be done with that experiment, move him back to tackle as a backup. So that may be one of the reasons he's getting those snaps early, so they won't waste that like seasonal time, you know, on this experiment. They can do these first two preseason games, either he get it or he don't, and then move him back to tackle if he doesn't get going.
That's a great point. I hadn't really thought of that, but that makes a lot of sense that you would order it exactly that way. I bet that went into the thinking.
Yeah.
All righty. So let's see. If there's anything else on the offensive line, I think we're good on that. Why don't we go through to some of the individual performances from this game? Because, you know, the Ravens offense, and at wide receiver, at running back, whatever, has some very exciting players now again.
Right. Especially Boykins.
All right. So let's talk about Boykin first. Wait, tell me what you saw first, and I'll chime in with some other stuff.
And I took a few notes on Boykin the other day when I did a live stream, and he had – I put down he had 2.5 drops. The reason I said a half drop, because he had a toe touch that he was trying to get his feet down, and he didn't catch it. So I kind of, to me, that was a half drop because he had other things going on. And the ball was kind of outside anyway. But the fact that they came back to him and he did some good things really, really impressed me. His touchdown where he just ran past a guy, which, and when I watched in slow motion, the defender didn't necessarily jam him. But when Boykins took off, he didn't turn and run with him. So I'm guessing he's faster than the DB thought he was, which leads back to his 40 time. When I watched him, the few times I watched him in college, he didn't look fast. But for that defender to be standing flat-footed and thinking he could just turn and run with him, and the way he ran by the guy, that impressed me.
Great measurables at the combine. I would agree with you. That play was one of them where they really showed up. And you know, we always talk about the defensive back jamming the wide receiver, but isn't it also true sometimes where there's a big size differential and not a huge speed differential between the receiver and the DB covering him, that you often get a reverse jamming experience where the offensive player can take the defender off his ability to easily cover that route with that first contact.
He's the aggressor. He's the aggressor and get the defender off balance. And then by the time the defender recovers, he's gone. Especially if their speed is close to the same. So I definitely, you know, see that with a lot of big receivers. And if they know, if they're big and can run, they use that in their toolbox.
So we saw that, and that was wonderful. I thought the other play I really liked was the stretch for the marker. And it was this, you know, they needed 7 yards, and that was a strength and size first down there. And a lot underrated a strength first down to get to that marker. It's one of those places where his measurables were on display in this game for that. Also, some of the problems with the drops, as you mentioned, I didn't think he did a great job of using his body to box out in the game. He did it once well. He did it a couple times not as well. The other thing I didn't like about his game was the failing to convert to a defender quickly on the interception by Hayes. It was right in front of him. He had a chance to strip that guy, but he still had his arms up for the ball. Wasn't really anticipating the interception the way he could have to get that strip.
Yeah, that's one thing he's going to have to change. You know, definitely if he wants 50-50 balls, because they're going to have to trust him to either you catch it or you knock it down or nobody catches it. But that's the only, like, negative other than the two drops that I saw. But the my favorite catch of his was the slant. And the fact that he got in and out of his break, and he used that big body to get between the defender. And, you know, he made a body catch, which I'm not a fan of. But the fact that he had enough space between the defender and the ball, I like that, because it's going to be hard to take your left arm and wrap around with the right arm that big body.
Yeah.
So I was impressed with that.
Yeah, there you go. And that's exactly what that defender would have to do to stop a slant. That's not easy. Otherwise, it's on the quarterback to really anticipate if a linebacker is undercutting that route or if an outside linebacker in particular is dropping to coverage and getting there.
Exactly.
All right. Let's see. Was there anything else about him? I love the catch on the sideline also. We really haven't talked about that. He fought his way out of bounds after that 24-yard catch. And for them, it's a tribute to both McSorley and Boykin, because I think all the throws went to Boykin in that four-play sequence or three-play sequence. But he caught a ball for 24. Then he caught a ball. He caught the touchdown for 17 that got come back, and he caught a slant right before that for the 7. So it was 3 balls to him in that very, very quick drive at the end of the half. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
He definitely put me on the believing train. I was skeptical at first, but I see potential in him, and I see a lot of potential in him, and definitely he cleaned up those drops. But as a rookie, he's probably gonna have that, especially when he play in some stadiums that he, you know, just because he's going to be in awe of or play against some guys that, you know, he's played with on Madden or whatnot. So he'll have some drops. But I think, you know, if he has less than 8 drops in the season and plays a significant amount of snaps, I'd be good with that.
Yeah, that's right. He should be in a position to catch a lot of balls. And Crabtree had a lot of drops, but Crabtree also had a ton of contested catches because he doesn't have the athletic advantages anymore over the other DBs. But Boykin has those, and he's going to be open a lot.
Yep. Now,
they went to him 10 times in that first half, which is just an extraordinary number of targets, including the one penalty that got called back. It was like 9 official targets. Do you see him as a guy who's going to get 125 targets this year?
No, I do not. Okay. The reason I say that because of our tight ends and Hollywood Brown and Willie Snead. I don't think he's going to get that many targets because we have a plethora of guys that can catch the ball, and we don't have one stud that's going to demand the ball.
That's actually a very nice thing to have, is some ability to spread that around. And I think that should help the Ravens run offense as well, to have a bunch of guys that are dangerous in space and get that box spread out a little bit, because it was tight last year.
They had a whole city in a box.
Yeah, there you go. We don't have to talk about that. It's too tangential. But let's get on and talk a little bit about Kenneth Dixon here in terms of his playing there. Now, Dixon's in his fourth year, and he's on the margin of the roster. And the unfortunate facts of economics in the NFL are, when you're in your fourth year, you're going to be a free agent at the end of the year. The team owns nothing about your future except for the potential for a compensatory draft pick. I think we'd agree that Dixon is not the sort of player who would likely fit into the compensatory formula. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy who really has to make it on his own talent this year. And if somebody is equivalent to him or even a little bit behind, who's a younger player, they probably get his spot.
Yeah. My thing with Kenneth is, if we keep four, he's still on the bubble. If we keep three, definitely he's gone. Right. Even though he changed his body some, and he looks, you know, a little bit faster than he did when he caught the ball in the playoff game and got ran down. He looks athletic, even more athletic. He lost a little weight. But if, you know, four, he's on the bubble. Three, he's cut, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So if one of the things we've been talking about in recent weeks is whether or not the Ravens were going to keep a fullback. So Dixon and Patrick Ricard's future may be intertwined there. And Ricard having the extra year of team control makes him a more attractive asset, quite possibly. So
I think Ricard's versatility is going to keep him on the team. And now, you know, if it's up to those two, they'll keep Ricard with, you know, because he can play the fullback position, and he just had a monster game playing defense.
He sure did, didn't he? That was cool as anything. I thought the other thing that was a good indication on Ricard was that they're using him in a lot of different starting positions in those first five or six plays of the game. Mm-hmm. They split him out. They ran him as a receiver. They motioned him into the backfield, which is just having a pulling guard come in. Freight train basically coming into the backfield. Right. So even Boyle's a big guy, but Ricard is so much bigger and so much nastier that, boy, you love that.
I did a video about Roman's offense when he was with the 49ers the year they went to the Super Bowl also. And Ricard was the guy that came to mind because Roman had a lot of fullback stuff in there. And I was thinking we didn't have that body on the team. But Ricard is the guy that could make that work, because that fullback in the video, he did a lot of pulling. He did a lot of catching balls in the flats, and he did a lot of isolation stuff when I can't think who the tailback was that year for them.
Frank Gore, maybe?
Frank Gore did a lot. He did a lot of running behind the fullback, and I can see Ricard playing that role, because I, you know, unless he has a full preseason like he did the other night, he's not going to get many snaps of D-line, because we fully kind of loaded right there. So there his role would be like a backup D-lineman and full-time fullback, because with what Roman did at San Francisco, we're going to need a guy that can do that, and, you know, with our tight ends.
Okay.
The only tight end that probably could do it is Boyle.
Boyle, okay. We have a group of listeners I think would love to see that video. So why don't you send me the link to that, and I'll make sure when I promo this show that we get out there with it, and people can take a look at that video.
Okay. We'll do.
All right. Well, let's move on and talk a little bit about another player I thought was very exciting, Justice Hill, in this game.
Yes.
Why don't you start?
His burst is way better than I thought. I knew it was fast, but that guy eight angles up. I'm excited for the Ravens to pound with Gus and Ingram, and to give him a stretch play or to throw him a screen out the backfield for him to get a check down. That guy's fast, and he's not only fast on the track, he's fast with the ball in his hand.
Get him out in space. I love eats up angles. Tell the listeners what you mean by that, just to explain it a little bit.
Okay, as far as eating up angles, one play in particular, I don't remember when it was, he got the ball, he was in the flats, and there were two guys in pursuit of him that had what we would call in football terms the angle. So meaning if you run at a certain angle, no matter how fast they're going, you should meet them at a certain point. Well, those guys took off at angles, and by the time they got to where they should meet, they were behind the heel. So that's what I mean. They misjudged his speed because he was so fast that when they got to the perceived meeting point, they were behind, so they had to turn and run up the field. So that's eating up the angle.
All right. That's great. That play on the sideline was minus three plus 17, I think, or minus three plus 20, whichever it was. It was like a 14-yard gain. Just an outrageous outrunning of that linebacker and then a mm-hmm. cutback to beat the defensive back who misjudged things. That was great. You know what I also loved? He had a straight-ahead play where the cornerback came in off the edge, kind of like Ed Reed used to do, went low to his legs for an arm tackle. He ran right through that thing, left the leg, and right through it for a six-yard gain. So I like to have a little bit of downhill ability from him too, because it can't always be going to the outside. But then that said, I love what he's going to bring to this team on any kind of jet action. That's really should loosen up the box and keep the defense honest.
All right, definitely. Any stretch plays, he can do that. If we're a good enough team to run the stretch, but you just think of you tackling Ingram the whole game, you're tackling Gus the whole game, and then they throw this lightning rod in there for a play or two. Wow, I'm so excited to see what Roman has in store for him, because this offense is so, it could be so complex. It could be so complex with all the pieces we got. And again, I like the fact that we don't have a guy that has to get the ball. That's what makes it deadly.
Yeah, so you got three tight ends, and they can all help you as receivers in mm-hmm. different ways. You got three running backs. They can all carry the ball. You got now the two probably most exciting rookie wide receivers the team's had, maybe ever.
Ever,
at least have to go back to Travis Taylor or maybe Demetrius Williams or Mark Clayton, maybe, if you really want to get aggressive about it, to find more exciting rookie receivers than this. I mean, obviously, Perriman didn't get on the field and show anything as a rookie. He could have been as exciting, but those other guys didn't end up panning out, but they were exciting as rookies.
Are these the highest we've picked receivers?
So I'd have to go back and check that. Demetrius Williams, I think, was a four. Mark Clayton was a one. Travis Taylor was a one. Clayton was picked 22 overall, I believe. Travis Taylor, I believe, was number 10 overall in 2000. Mm-hmm. So they've had a few guys. Patrick Johnson in 1999 or 98, whichever year they drafted him, was also a two. So they've used a few high round picks.
Okay, but I think these two will be the most exciting, simply because of Hollywood speed. And he doesn't even have to catch a lot of balls. Mm-hmm. He just needs two attempts down the seam or outside to keep guys out of the box, and then that run game will be pretty deadly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I can't wait to see him on the field. It's just I imagine he's not going to play against Green Bay, but who knows? We'll hope. Okay, let's go ahead and Trace McSorley, because obviously I didn't know what to expect from this guy, and he's been doing a lot in camp. They've been using him as a gunner coverage. Once I saw, I assume he's been used as a gunner also, that I have not observed that. So they've used him in a bunch of different ways, but he's just in a straight quarterback role here. More like Lamar Jackson of last year, where Lamar Jackson of this year is being asked not to run. That same constraint didn't seem to be on McSorley.
I like Trace as a third-string quarterback. I don't like him as a gadget guy. He's not big enough, and I don't think he's big. He's not big enough as Taysom Hill. And I really realized how big Taysom was the other day when the Saints were on NFL Network. Taysom is he's a linebacker playing quarterback. And if we ask McSorley to do those type of things, that little bite is not going to hold up to NFL pressure. But what he did, I like what he did in the preseason game. Stood in the pocket, delivered it. And when things broke down, he got out and used his legs. And he did have one. I think he had the interception where he stared the guy down. Mm-hmm. But I like the fact that he stood there and delivered the ball and tried to play quarterback and not be athletic quarterback. He was a quarterback that was an athlete.
Yeah, I was impressed by that and how he got rid of the ball under pressure, because as I mentioned, they only had 7 out of 22. I think it's 11 out of 33 overall, but only 7 out of 22 while McSorley was in a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And that included 5 of those unblocked pressures. So he really took the brunt of the hit on Minshew retribution, if you want to call it that.
Right.
The other thing I liked was that he ran the no huddle well.
Yes.
He got up there, up to the line of scrimmage quickly, plays called, boom, boom, he threw outside the numbers fairly effectively. Not everyone. He I thought he should have been flagged for intentional grounding on the one play where he threw the ball 30 yards over everybody directly from the pocket.
Right.
But he also threw well outside the numbers. And obviously that was a problem with Jackson last year, you know, in terms of accuracy there. But he was right on the sideline on those throws. One to Scott, one to Boykin. The pass interference call on Floyd down the right sideline. Those are all McSorley. So good throws.
He did a real good job of, like I said, standing there delivering the ball and playing the quarterback position. And didn't look like a gadget guy to me.
All right. All right. Do you think the Ravens are likely to keep three quarterbacks?
I think no. I think he will be a practice squad guy. And hopefully nobody comes claiming him.
All right. I'd be a little.
Well, depends on that thumb. Depends on how well that thumb is. RG3's. And and if he doesn't, I just think he's gonna be a practice squad guy. We kept three last year, did we not?
Let's see. I have to think about that. Yes. And when RG3, Flacco, and Lamar, of course, we're all on the same team at the same time. One of the things I've been thinking about with the injury to RG3, you hate to use your IRDTR designations, and you no longer have to designate them in advance, but you still have to use them when they come off IR. Mm-hmm. Would this be something where you'd leave RG3 on IR until he's needed? Now, you can't bring him off before, I think, week 9,
mm-hmm.
and then hope it works out with Lamar, or you work through it with McSorley if it doesn't, and then you bring RG3 off at that point if you need it.
I didn't think about that. Or you can IR McSorley for a toe injury.
There you go, and then bring him back if you lose one of those two.
Exactly. So I didn't think about that, but that's a great point. That's part of that stash that the Ravens have been so well known for.
It just seems with their depth this year, they're probably going to have some of that happening at various positions. Let's move on though.
Let's take a quick break right here because one of you guys' mics is acting up. So let's fix that mic and then we'll come right back. All right, we're back. We got the mic stuff straightened out. So let's just jump straight back into it to Chris Moore, another guy that we're waiting to see. Like, is he a real sustainable receiver?
Sure. Well, I'll start on Chris. As a fourth-year player, again, a guy who has to be fighting for his job, although he has a lot of positives going on, being one of the Ravens' best special teams players. And also, the thing he has shown to me so far last year, obviously, and then in the game Thursday night, is a terrific catch radius. He's the guy who can go get it wherever you throw it, even if it's off target.
I agree. His catch rate is good, and especially to go along with the speed that he has. He's great on go routes. He's great on post routes. He's great on that long over route that he got the pass interference for. I do have a problem with his intermediate routes, though. Last year, he would, like, let's just take a dig, for instance, a deep end, 10 and in. He would get his 10 yards, but instead of cutting that at, like, 8 or 9 and then cutting across that 10, he'd end up at, like, 12 or 13, which would bring the safety down. His routes were he would drift in his route, so to speak, and that gave the DBs potential to knock the ball down or undercut it. And that's why I said I didn't think Chris was a great receiver, but he's great in certain routes. And he could have improved in those routes. I just hadn't saw him. I haven't seen him make those routes in the preseason game, and I haven't been vivid to much camp video. So if that was one of the things he was bad at last year, I'm not saying he's bad at it right now because I haven't seen enough film. But if he gets to be a better route runner on short to intermediate routes, he's definitely going to be on our team to maybe even one of the starters.
He doesn't have the same kind of big body that Boykin has, or that, some of the really large receivers have, any of the tight ends for that matter, in terms of being able to be that slant guy. But I guess one question I have is, if you have a guy who's known as a lazy route runner or a little bit of an inaccurate or half-step route runner, is more a guy who you could convert with the proper coaching to run that hitch so that the back always know the back shoulder throw is there? Because if he's a guy who you fear on a deep route, he can be the guy you fear on the hitch route as well on the sideline.
Yeah, that normally goes hand in hand with guys that can run. They have DBs that normally want to play off of them because they don't want to get beat deep. So the hitch is their counter to to the deep routes. So definitely I can see him being a hitch guy, especially if he's on a single receiver side and they don't want to give up a deep ball on the slant or a post or even a goal like that.
Okay, so on the single side, less likely to have a safety on his side of the field then. More likely to be playing a guy on an island over there. Okay, gotcha. All right, wonderful. Anything else about the – I think we talked about some other Moore's other plays earlier, so why don't we just move on here. Jaleel Scott, another receiver. And boy, what an odd preseason game. We're talking about so many Ravens receivers. How cool is this?
But he got what – I won't say garbage time, but I didn't really see Scott much when the game kind of mattered. Even though I know all of them out there. Go ahead.
I can tell you exactly when he came in, because Maureen keeps this wonderful chart for us during the preseason of all the offensive players by drives and substitutions. So he came in on the first drive of Q3 as a substitution. And then I'll have his number of snaps for you here in a moment. But what did you see?
I saw a guy that's learning how to use his body. He's learning how to high point balls, a willing blocker, and he's a guy that's getting to be a better player. I don't know if time's going to allow him to get to where he needs to be to make the team. So does that make sense? So he's an improving player and getting better at parts of the game he needs to succeed, but I don't know if time's going to allow him the time he needs to progress.
Well, he's been one of the really big stories of camp, and the Ravens have basically veteran alternatives to what he can provide them on the outside. So they've got Floyd, who I'm not sure how much the team likes him. And by the way, Floyd came in even later in the same drive. He came in the same drive of the game as Scott did. Mm-hmm. And, the other one is Roberts. Now, Roberts is higher on the depth chart, but he got hurt in this first game. And he's a guy I think the Ravens really need him to work on the outside, given the stable of slot ponies they otherwise have on their roster. They've got some smaller receivers. You got Justice Hill. You may want to break out into the slot. You got other options for the slot, but they really need guys who can play on the outside and play big.
Roberts was a slot guy for Oakland.
Yes.
So
yeah, he was.
When he came, I thought he was a clone of Chris Moore.
Yeah, there you go. But he's a 6'2 guy, and he really should be a guy who we'd be able to expect to play on the outside. But you're right. He has a slot background in Oakland, and that's it. You mentioned the block by Scott, but he really had a great block down the left sideline on the 21-yard run by, who was it, Turner, down that left sideline. But he pushed over a defensive back and must have added about 8 yards to that play with that block.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Turner also. But any receivers that block, that floats my boat. Because when I was just a receivers coach, my motto was no block, no rock. So, I'm serious. If you could talk to any of those guys, those young guys I coach, they would know if they didn't block on run plays, I was not calling plays for them to get the ball. Not.
There you go. No block, no rock. I love it. That will come up again on our show. I guess. Now, we probably need to hit on the Corey Vedvik story after what's happened here. And exciting news that Corey Vedvik goes for a fifth-round pick. I know there had been talk around the internet that maybe he'd draw a first or a second or this kind of thing. The fifth-round pick is the most that's ever been exchanged for a kicker in, I think it's at least 30 years in the NFL. It might have been 1994 was the last time. I guess that's 25 years that Moore was exchanged for a kicker. There was I'm forgetting the name, so I won't even try. But anyway, Vedvik, 12 out of 13, made a kick of 56 and 55 in 2 years of kicking for us. Couldn't be more happy for him. Couldn't even be more happy, except that the amount I'm happy for the Ravens. I'm very happy about that.
I talked about this on my live stream the other day, that this was the ultimate stash. And the reason I say that, because obviously he got attacked or whatever happened to him last year. But we never saw a black eye. We never saw a swollen ankle. He disappeared after that. So, me being a conspiracy theorist, was that an ultimate stash? So this would happen. But whoever orchestrated this is I think DaCosta, you're awesome. You got a fifth round pick for a kicker.
It's a great price for the kicker. But just I don't think there was a conspiracy going on. I really do think this happened, and there was a police report, and there were other things going on. So I think there's enough evidence that it really did happen. But it was
there's
a
much better ways to hide someone than to come up with an assault.
Yes. You got to get a lot more people involved in the conspiracy to do that. Keep the conspiracy small, right? All right. Now, at this point in the show, we usually go through the offensive MVPs, and I go 3-2-1 on mine, and you can play along, Ivan, and tell me who your number three guy was.
My number three guy, and I'm bringing off the cusp, is I'm gonna say Powells. I'll say Powells, and mainly because he's one of the guys I've been wanting to see play, and you know, I didn't see much of him because, you know, he did his job, and when you do your job, you're, like we talked about earlier, you're kind of invisible.
All right, my number three guy is Boykin. While I think he played a good game, I think it was more about what we saw of the upside he could have, and you know what he flashed in terms of potential in this game, as opposed to actual results from it. So while I gave him a plus two in my grading, which would say he took the biggest jump of anybody, he really only is the third MVP of this game. Still very good though.
Agreed, and go ahead and start with number two. My number two would be Boykin, but simply because of, you know, he showed the ability to bounce back and not let those early drops like keep him down. He came in and made plays, even though he had an interception called back. He basically did his job on that play. The slant, like I said, I was impressed with earlier, and you know, his overall effort, you know, just to go out there and show that, you know, he can play, because you know, a lot of people did not really like the pick, you know, me being one of them, but he has changed my mind, and he's going out there doing his job. And with 10 targets, they're really, you know, trying to see, hey, can you play for us, and can you play right now?
Yeah, it's definitely exciting to see him be that much a focus of the offense. My number two guy is Powers, and I'll just say that the one point I want to reinforce from earlier is that I really love the idea of having another lineman who will lean on the opposing defensive line and get them tired. The Ravens should dominate snap count again if their offense is as good as it appears to be, and if their defense continues to play smart rotational football and be as effective as they were under Martindale, or anywhere really near as effective as they were under Martindale last year. And if that's the case, then it's going to really matter that opposing linemen are tired.
Can I ask you a question about Powers? Does he display that same trait from Orlando with them playing both at Oklahoma? Both of them kind of got that same coaching mentality, because I know Orlando leans on guys, so
yeah,
you know, two of the five guys could potentially be from Oklahoma.
Yeah, or I mean, I'm not sure if it's based on Oklahoma, and we had heard from the past that Orlando Brown was a guy who his father had gotten on him a little bit for not being an aggressive enough, physical enough player, not using his size as well. Mm-hmm. Powers, I think he's just a nasty son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. So he's done a really good job. I think he is maybe in a different class in terms of how much he leans on an opponent. But Brown is getting better at using his size. He certainly you know, has displayed athleticism that we didn't know existed, I think, last year. You would agree, right?
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree.
Who's your number one guy?
Justice Hill.
All right. Good
Justice
choice.
Justice Hill is my number one guy. His burst, his ability to be a fast football player, and not just fast on the 40, really, you know, and I knew he was fast because I watched the game between Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, because, you know, three of our rookies were in that game, and he showed burst in that game too. But for to have that transfer to the NFL with a little added poundage on him, I'm really excited about what he can do as a change of pace back.
All right, that's a great pick. I'm going to give it to Chris Moore because of what he did for the offense in general. A 30-yard catch, an 18-yard catch, and a 17-yard pass interference play. From his own personal perspective, I think he answered a lot of the questions and is now very likely to make this team. I would have said it was 90% before. Now I think it's very close to 100 after this game one.
I agree. I think he's a lock and potentially a starter now.
All right, Josh, how are we doing in the mailbag?
Yeah, let's get to the mailbag a little bit. Your chance to get involved with the show and steer the show. You can leave your questions on Twitter using the hashtag FilmStudyMailbag, and I'll find them there, or comment over on FilmStudyRavens.com, and I will pull them from there. First one up, we're going to go with Bart, who is wondering, what do you handicap as Sanat's chances at making the team?
Okay, I'm going to give a shot. I'll give you a chance to think about it, Ivan. I'm going to go with maybe about 65% right now. And a lot of it comes down to whether or not they're going to keep eight or nine linemen, which is a function in general of depth across the roster. Now, the guy I think may actually make trouble for Sanat isn't really one of the other offensive linemen. I think they could go with a surprise cut. I think the guy who could make it difficult for him to make the roster is if they really believe a player like Ricard can be an emergency offensive lineman. And what that would do for the Ravens is allow them to have a 6-5 situation on a Sunday if they really wanted to get one other active guy. It's a dangerous move, but it was one they could do if they could decide they could move Ricard in onto the line, whether at tackle or guard, in such a situation. Obviously, it wouldn't be optimal, but in most likelihood, he's competing with people like Illuminor and like Hurst. So if Illuminor bombs out, I think, you know, Sinnott's certainly on the team. Hurst is a guy who they actually have a small salary cap savings from cutting him. So if they suddenly decide that Hurst is just not getting it done, the salary cap savings isn't much. But if they want to keep Sinnott, they want to keep Sinnott. And, you know, you don't want to put him on the practice squad. You keep him and you drop Hurst.
And I'm going to handicap it at 50-50 based off what you just said. If we keep 8, I think he's out. If we keep 9, he's the guy. And, you know, if we can save money and if Hurst, like same thing with Illuminor. If Hurst is not way better than Powers or even better yet Bozeman, because he's been at, you know, competition at guard also, they get rid of him. Get rid of and save the money what he can, because you know he's interested in saving money toward next year. I'm really impressed with what the cost is doing financially.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's stay with that with Greg, who's wondering if any of the possible starters at left guard, did any of them play well considering the running game struggles?
You know, I'm on record that Powers played well and Illuminor did not. And those are most of the guys who played at left guard during the game. So they only had, a little bit of 5 snaps or whatever with Isaiah Williams at the end of the game otherwise. So, yeah, Powers played well, Illuminor not from my point of view. Anything different on?
No, I agree with you 100%. Powers was invisible. Illuminor was visible.
And, of course, Powers, you're not planning to be a starter, so the answer would be no. As far as is there any possible starters that played well?
Oh, I think it's possible that Powers wins the starting job. Certainly at some point this year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I agree also. I think only reason he doesn't start is to give those guys a chance to concretely win that job. But I think they're going to be pushing for him to start, kind of like what Brown did last year.
All right. Mr. Ed is wondering which of the running backs is best suited for pass protection.
You know, that's one of the – I'm sorry, go ahead, Ivan. You go first.
I think it's Mark Ingram because, he did it a lot with Drew Brees last year. He was efficient at it. And, you know, he doesn't mind sticking his nose in there and picking up blitzers. I've seen him do it a number of times. And I just think he's the best one for it. Now, Gus is not bad, but I just think Mark is the better one for pass pro.
Right. And Gus is not bad, but he's going to be more of a running down guy. So among the other three backs, you have Justice Hill, who's a smaller guy. I don't really know him as a pass blocker yet, but you got to really be a Danny Woodhead, attack the body kind of pass blocker to be a good pass blocker at his size.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to do. Ken Dixon, it's a big problem. He's not a good pass blocker at all. Looked bad in this game as a pass blocker. Even when I think he did the right thing to go for a cut block, he missed it pretty badly. And he's someone that his roster spot's in jeopardy in part because he's not really a good pass blocker, despite the fact he could give you something as a receiver on those third downs.
True. But as a pass blocker, he didn't have much in him last year also.
All right. Marquise Brown, when are we going to get to see a little bit out of Hollywood?
Well, he's been in practice as of Saturday, 11-on-11. That's a fantastic sign. Every step of the way, he's been ahead of the curve. He passed his conditioning test earlier, and he was on the field doing some stuff. And now he's you know, done his first 11-on-11 activity. That's very good to see. I predict he will be in at some point during the preseason. I don't expect it to be this week, but maybe next week is his first game.
I think he plays in a dress rehearsal, which is game 3.
All right. That's exciting. Game 3 means he's ready for the season, right?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. All right, let's close out the mailbag with Mark, who gets in here and is just basically setting this question up just for a transition for me. So Ken isn't with RSR anymore. Mind telling us if we can find your work somewhere new?
Yes, by all means you can. It's at Film Study Ravens on Twitter and filmstudyravens.com as the website. So we have the articles there, the podcast there, and also ability to comment and interact and set up for any responses that will occur on the podcast.
Yeah, great growing site that gives the freedom to find to do everything film study. And if you just type Film Study Ravens into Google or any of your like computers, it always pops up with either your Twitter handle or the blog post or something to get to find your content.
Now, you also, you don't mention this all the time, but what's the easiest way to find the podcast itself? Is it to go through the Film Study Ravens or would you go to?
All right, real easy. And if you use an iPhone, check out the podcast app. If you use Android, check out Google Play. You just type in Film Study. The favorite of a lot of people that's new, so we haven't even really promoted it, is Spotify. If you're a Spotify subscriber, you can just type Film Study in there and we'll pop up. Now, you might get some podcast suggestions of like movie and filmmaking stuff, but if you just type Film Study, we're on the list. If you type Film Study Ravens, top of the list.
Okay.
Just Ravens. We're like under the Ravens official podcast. So real easy to find in any podcast app you use.
Do you want to talk about 336? Anything going on over there?
I mean, it's every week we got new 336 episodes coming out, and we're talking Orioles and even through the struggles. I did launch in the beginning of July 336 Daily, which is little 5 to 10 minute daily episodes that come out every morning. A weekday morning. So I'd love it if you subscribe to 336 Daily when you're going on those podcast apps, as well as subscribing to Film Study.
Okay, sounds good. And Ivan, what projects do you have going on your YouTube channel now?
I'm really just working on the vlogs for preseason because I don't want to use any of the TV tape to get those strikes. So most of my video study would be me just talking about it or me doing a live discussing what happened during the game. And I also added the call-in section to my show. So when I'm live, there'll be the number scrolling with the telephone number and access code. And I have callers calling in talking about the game and just talking about what they saw, what they want to see, or actually my opinion on different things.
Oh, that's very cool.
Do you have a scheduled time that you go live all the time?
Not right now. I don't because I am a real high school coach. So my time is fluctuating, but I normally try to. Like, if I know I'm going to do it that night, I try to put something out throughout the day to let people know, hey, I'm going to go live at such and such time. But I don't have a set spot yet.
All right. So follow Ivan on Twitter at Coach Evans 9.
Correct? Coach Evans 9 on Twitter. And on YouTube, it's Sip the Tally Films. SIP, the number 2, TALLY Films.
All right. All right, and the Ravens somehow got a great preseason schedule where this week they play the Packers on Thursday, but it's in Baltimore. Very little travel this preseason. So I'm sure, Ken, you'll be breaking down the same type of articles that we have listed up on the site now for these games, and we'll probably talk on Friday to break down the Packers game.
Yes, we will. That's looking forward to it. Coach, thanks so much for joining us. Always a pleasure talking to you about football. We'd love to have you on again this preseason, since I think the offensive line is really the hot topic for the Ravens here. But just in general, would love having you.
Okay, I'm happy to be here.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger,
offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.